Okay.
Will you do the flag salute?
I can do that.
You can do that?
Okay. Good morning, members of the commission, staff, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, everyone, for your patience. The commission is now in session. Let's see. There's a few rules and procedures we'd ask for you to follow. Everyone will be given an opportunity to be heard. When it is your turn to speak, please come to the podium, state your name and address clearly for the record. Those in support of the application will be heard first, then those opposed will be heard. After that, the applicant will be given an opportunity for rebuttal, and if so, the someone opposed may be given will be given the opportunity for surrebuttal. We ask that you limit your presentations to 5 minutes or less. After all the speakers have been heard, the hearing will be closed. No additional speakers will be allowed unless one of the commissioners asks that the hearing be reopened. Finally, the commissioners will discuss the application, make motions, and vote to reach a decision. If you're not satisfied with today's decision, you may be able to appeal to the Board of Supervisors. Appeals must be filed within a specified period of time after today's hearing, and you can check with staff regarding the procedures to follow in filing your appeal. Please make sure your mobile phones and pagers are on mute. Thank you. Commissioner Chata, will you lead us in the flag salute, please?
Salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Wherever you'd like. I don't know. Okay. A couple items I just wanted to mention. Item number 5 on this agenda was unclassified conditional use permit application number 3749 has been canceled. It was regarding a solid waste processing facility for the recycling of well drilling mud. And then there was an item. Notices weren't sent out, but it was pulled. It'll be heard at a different date. It was CUP 3755 filed by CMEX, and notices will be sent out for the future meeting on that one. So if we can go to roll call.
Commissioner Rabian.
Here.
Commissioner Carver is absent. Commissioner Chata.
Yeah.
Commissioner Yule is absent. Commissioner Wolf.
Here.
Commissioner Zante.
Here.
Vice Chair Hill is absent. Chairman Abrahamian.
Here.
We have a quorum.
We do have a quorum, 5 members. On the consent agenda, there are no consent agenda items for this hearing. On the regular agenda, the first item is public presentations. This portion of the meeting is reserved for persons desiring to address the commission on any matter within the commission's jurisdiction, but not on this agenda. Is there anyone that wishes to approach the commission? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number 2.
Regular agenda item number 2, tentative tract map application number 6382 and classified conditional use permit application number 3726 and initial study number 8154 proposing to allow the creation of a 9-lot residential subdivision from a 39.63-acre parcel and a 2.09-acre parcel in the RR zone district. The ninth 2.09-acre parcel, Lot 9, is a remainder lot from an approved parcel map number 8193. The subject parcel's acre located on the west side of Aubrey Road, approximately 600 feet southwest of its intersection with Thunderbird Road within the unincorporated community of Prather.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Planning Commission. Ijaz Ahmad with the Department of Public Works and Planning. Good morning. Can you hear now? Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Planning Commission. Ijaz Ahmad with the Department of Public Works and Planning. There are two discretionary applications related to this proposal. The tentative tract map application involves creation of a 9-lot residential subdivision from a 39.63-acre parcel and a 2.09-acre parcel. The conditional use permit application involves waiving County Zoning Ordinance Section 820.5-J Access 1 requirement that vehicular access to the tract shall be from a dedicated and improved road. Access to Lot 2 through 7 will be from two private ingress and egress easements off Aubrey Road. Both easements will be improved to county road standards. Both applications are linked together and are to be approved together or denied together. This is an aerial view of the property. The project site is located on the west side of Aubrey Road, south of Thunderbird Avenue or the road. The project site and the surrounding land is zone RR rural residential and AE 40 exclusive agriculture. The project site is currently a grazing land surrounded by grazing land, home sites, and commercial and religious facilities. This is a view of the proposed tract map. This map shows lot 1, 8, and 9. Are over 2 acres in size and have direct access off of Aubrey Road. This is the Aubrey Road down here. And lot 2 through 7 are more than 5 acres in size and do not have Aubrey Road frontage. These parcels will gain access via two existing private ingress and egress easements off Aubrey Road. So there is one easement here, and the second one is down here. This is just in a street view of the project site, looking west on Aubrey Road. Another view of the site, looking north from Aubrey Road. The initial study prepared for the project has identified potential impacts related to biological resources, cultural resources, and hydrology and water quality. To minimize these impacts, mitigation measures were recommended in the initial study and has been accepted by the applicant. Additionally, the project will adhere to the conditions of approval and regulatory requirements of Fresno County and other agencies included as Exhibit 1 in the staff report. 5 findings must be made to approve this tentative tract map application. They are as follows. The proposed subdivision map and the design of the improvements are consistent with the general plan. The project site is physically suitable for the type and density of the development proposed. The project will not likely to cause substantial environmental damage. The design of the subdivision will not conflict with easement acquired by public at large. The project is not likely to cause serious public health problems. Per the discussion on page 3 through 14 of the subdivision review committee report, the site is suitable for residential use. The site development will not affect environment / wildlife and their habitat and will not have adverse effects on public health and also will not conflict with public easements. 5 findings must be made to approve this conditional use permit application. They are as follows. The size and shape of the parcel is adequate for the use. Street and highways are adequate for the use. No adverse effects will occur on the neighborhood. The project is consistent with general plan and will comply with conditions necessary to protect public health, safety, and general welfare. Per the discussion on page 14 to page 18, staff was able to make all 5 findings for CUP or a conditional use permit number 3726. In reviewing the subject application, staff believes that the required findings can be made. Therefore, staff recommends your commission adopt the mitigated negative declaration prepared for initial study 8154. An approved tentative tract map number 6382 and conditional use permit application number 3726 with the included mitigation measures and conditions of approval. This concludes staff presentation, and I'll be happy to answer any question related to this agenda.
Thank you, Ejaz. Could you put up Exhibit 3, the existing zoning map?
Okay. Right there.
Okay, on on mine, since it's black and white, I couldn't tell what the rural residential property was, but...
Everything in yellow is the rural residential.
In yellow?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes, Commissioner Wolf.
Because it's rural residential and it's zoned that way, why is this coming before us? Is it because of the egress?
No, the tract map has to be approved by the Planning Commission. So that's why it's coming to you. And we have added the CUP condition or CUP application because of the access issue to those parcels.
Because of the access?
Yeah.
And if it were just a single person that had one lot, they wouldn't necessarily have to come before us. Isn't it also, you're talking about a subdivision?
Correct. All tentative maps of subdivisions come before you. It's a parcel map, and it doesn't have to come before you.
Okay. Hmm. Any other questions? Thank you, Ejaz.
Thank you.
Could the applicant come forward?
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. My name is Lauren Smith. I'm with Harbor and Associates Engineering, 389 Clovis Avenue, Clovis, California. We believe this is a very nice project, complements the Prather area. We agree to all the conditions and respectfully request your approval of the project. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer the best of my ability.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Are there any questions of the speaker? Commissioner Wolf.
I think it's the long driveway to get to lot number 7. And it looks like the fire department has approved this. And I know that I know this area, and so I do know that there's some threats of fire in the area. With that, is that enough for a bunch of fire engines to pull on in and take care of that if that lot burns?
The width is will be to the county standards. And the site, when the home is built, will have to have a fire storage tank on the site to assist with fire protection.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Is there anyone else to speak in support of this application?
I'm Don Fowler. I'm the property owner and managing partner of Family Farms, and we appreciate the hard work that all the staff has put in preparing this. You can see there's a lot of paperwork involved, and spent a lot of time with EJS trying to put this together. And just, I want to give a shout out to your county staff for the work they've done in helping us put this together. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fowler. Anyone else to speak in support of this application?
Hello. I own 21 and 25 lot across the street, and I want to know if it's going to affect...
Could we get your name and...
Oh, Bobby Sanders.
I'm sorry, the name again?
Bobby Sanders.
Okay. And where do you live? Or where
I want to know if this is going to affect my groundwater and stuff, because I live off of the land, you know, and I have a well, and I don't know about all this new development going on here, but I got a notification about it, and I just wanted somebody explain to me how this is going to affect my world.
Okay. So you're not necessarily up here to support the application. You had questions regarding the water. Is that correct?
That, and I really don't support it because there's a school across the street.
Mr. Sanders, if you would, hold on for just a moment. Let me ask if there's anyone else first in support, because they speak first, and then you would speak, and that gives the ones in support an opportunity to address your question.
All right.
So let me just go back. Stay right there and just see if there is anyone else to speak in support of this application. Okay. Then I will ask if there's anyone to speak in opposition or those with concerns to come up, and Mr. Sanders has come up. May we get your address and then you can continue.
29242 Albury Road.
Okay. And again, if you wouldn't mind repeating where your property is and your concerns.
There's a pointer also.
Use this, the green. Yes,
sir.
believe I'm in here.
Okay, just right in that general area?
Yeah.
Okay. And how is your water right now, as far as you know?
Well, I had it tested, and they said it's mineral water with a little bit of sediment in it.
Okay.
So they were trying to sell me filters. But.
Are you talking more about the volume, about wells going dry? Is that the concern, or is
no,
it the
my
quality?
Well never went dry, but there's concerns of how much their water they're going to use.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any other concerns you want to express this time?
Where is the school?
The school is right next to Ace Hardware, which is across the street from my property.
It's on the other side.
And it's probably 300 feet drive from my property to Albury Road. And then there's Ace Hardware, and then there's a school right next to Ace Hardware. And then I believe the subdivision is going to be going somewhere lower, more west of that. Well, I don't know. It's more people, more problems.
That's.
You're on the downhill. Is that correct?
I'm behind the store.
You're lower though than this project, in terms of altitude.
Well, higher.
Oh, you're up above them.
Yeah, I'm behind the store.
Behind the store.
Up in Prather.
Are there any other comments, Mr. Sanders, at this time?
No. No, it's just I don't. There ain't much I can do about it anyway, right?
Well, you can express,
my property.
Express your concerns, and we'll ask staff to address that issue as far as answering the question.
Yeah, it's the school buses and all the people that work at the school is like morning hectic as it is. Where you can't even get out on Albury Road because they're all coming or going. And then we're going to put a subdivision right next to that, and we're going to have major traffic going on. But, I mean, I just deal with it as it comes.
Yeah. How long have you been in your location?
8 years.
8 years?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions of Mr. Sanders? Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Is there anyone else here to speak in opposition or have concerns regarding this application? Okay. Would the applicant like to rebut at this time? And it would be to, I know Mr. Sanders just left, but it'd be to address the concerns about water. And your name?
My name is Lauren Smith with Harbor and Associates Engineering. All I can really say to address that is that we've had the required water testing done for the site to prove that we have substantial or water that will support this project. Not knowing the aquifers and how far away his property is, it's really hard to determine what kind of an effect this would have. But for the site that we're proposing 9 lots on, the testing supports the uses that we're proposing. As far as traffic goes, in the reports as well, it states that we're not creating substantial traffic. Again, we are only creating 9 lots, and we have 2 points of access to the public road and 3 lots fronting on it. So it's, I think the access points are spread out to where it's dispersed fairly well along Aubrey Road.
Okay, any questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I need to ask if there's anyone that wishes to rebut. Seeing none, we'll close the public portion of the hearing, bring it back to the commission for discussion and a motion. I'd like to ask staff regarding the water. About the applications will be made for the wells, at what point?
That's a county statute. That's not a condition or a mitigation measure. You'll see on page 3 of your report under the general plan policy table, it sort of addresses that. So as the gentleman indicated, there was a water supply study done, which included a 72-hour pump test. Excuse me. And the Water and Natural Resources Division reviewed that and determined that there was adequate water supply. Okay. But the other provision is statutory. So prior to them being able to finalize the map, they have to deal with that. And again, that's a regulatory issue, not something that we can dismiss or waive.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? The hearing's been closed, so if anyone likes to make a motion, you can find it on page 18.
Well, I think, oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, can I borrow your mic?
Sure.
So I was looking in here, and it says that the U.S., this is a question for staff, the Fish and Wildlife Service and Army Corps of Engineers were contacted, but they didn't respond because there's a creek that crosses through this project site. If they were to, after, you know, this project was approved, if they were to then come forward and you know, state their objections or not provide clearance, would that halt the project from proceeding, or what would that look like?
No, they wouldn't. They are routed as part of this, and there was a biological study done, et cetera. And obviously the water on the site was of a point of interest that we had to look at and study. But no, once the mitigated neg deck is adopted and the NOD posted, that's the end of it. If they do something like a stream alteration, well, then they have purview. That's within their jurisdiction. They would do it. But there's nothing like that proposed here.
Any other questions?
I agree with the staff's findings, and I'll make a motion to move to approve as read by staff.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion by Commissioner Arabian, a second by Commissioner Zante to support staff's recommendation of approval. Is there any discussion? Have a roll call vote.
Commissioner Arabian?
Yes.
Commissioner Zante?
Yes.
Commissioner Chatha?
Yes.
Commissioner Wolf?
Yes.
Chairman Abrahamian?
Yes. That item carries 5-0, would be final unless appealed to the Board of Supervisors. Next item.
Regular agenda item number 3, unclassified conditional use permit application number 3718 and initial study number 8116, proposing to allow the construction, operation, ultimate decommissioning of a battery energy storage consisting of lithium ion based battery modules housed in purpose built metal enclosures with integrated power conversion equipment, fire suppression system, transformer, and a 115 kilovolt transmission poles for the overhead wires crossing McCall Avenue for interconnection to nearby PGE Sanger substation. The project will be located on an approximately 11.3-acre portion of a 37.56-acre parcel in the AE20 zone district. The subject parcel is located on the northeast corner of South McCall and East Jensen Avenues, approximately 1.26 miles west of the nearest city limits of the city of Sanger.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Planning Commission. Ijaz Ahmad with the Department of Public Works and Planning. The proposed battery energy storage facility will provide storage capacity of 200 megawatts. The facility will operate for an estimated 20 years. The facility operation will include charging from the grid during the day and discharge during peak electric demands at night. Will be monitored remotely and maintained quarterly by service personnel. Will be dismantled and removed from the site after 20 years, and the site will be restored to its pre-project farming condition. The proposed facility will occupy northerly portion of the project site located at the intersection of McCall and Jensen Avenue. So the site is, this is the project site, and this northerly portion of the property is that's where the proposed development is going to occur, and the PG&E Sanger substation is right across from the street. The project site and the surrounding land are zoned AE20 exclusive agriculture. The project site is fallow. Surrounding uses include orchard, field crops, and commercial and residential uses. This is a site plan for the proposed development. The site plan shows the layout of the proposed battery storage facility, which is right here, all of this area, with access from McCall Avenue. And the property will gain access off of McCall Avenue, which is right here. This is just an elevational view of the battery storage unit. And this is a typical three-dimensional view of a typical battery energy storage facility. This is a picture that was provided by the applicant just to understand what it's going to look like. And this is a street view from McCall Avenue, looking south. And the PG&E substation is right here, and this is the project site. So it's, they're both divided by the street, McCall Avenue, both uses. Pursuant to the zoning ordinance, five findings must be made to approve this conditional use permit. Finding number one, the site is adequate in size and shape to accommodate the proposed use. Finding number two, street and highways are adequate in width and pavements to accommodate the traffic generated by the proposal. Per the discussion on page 4 through 8 of the staff report, staff was able to make the finding number one and two. Finding number three, project will have no adverse effects on the surrounding properties. The initial study prepared for the project identified potential impacts related to aesthetics, agriculture and forestry resources, biological resources, and agricultural resources. To minimize these impacts, mitigation measures were recommended in the initial study and has been accepted by the applicant. With mitigation measures, conditions of approval, and project notes, as discussed on pages 8 through 10 of the staff report, the staff was able to make finding number three. Finding number four, the proposal is consistent with general plan. The project is consistent with the general plan policies as discussed on page 10 and 12 of the staff report. The staff was able to make finding number four. Finding number five, the project conditions are deemed necessary to protect public health, safety, and general welfare. But the discussion on page 12 of the staff report, staff was able to make finding number five. In reviewing the application, staff believes that the required findings can be made. Therefore, staff recommends your commission adopt the mitigated negative declaration prepared for initial study number 8116 and approved classified conditional use permit application number 3718 with the included mitigation measures and conditions of approval. This concludes staff presentation. I'll be happy to answer any question related to this agenda item.
Are there any questions of staff?
Did you say this gets decommissioned after 20 years?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then will they then redo it, or is this just a 20-year and that's it?
Initially, right now, as the project is proposed, is 20 years.
Okay.
I saw it looks like the total cost would be about $5 million. Is that correct?
Where did you see that information?
Estimated decommissioning plan.
Oh, okay.
Exhibit 7.
That cost is the amount that we secure. So if there's a default, the thing goes bankrupt, whatever, and the required reclamation agreement provides enough funds so that the county can go in and remove it.
And so that money's secure.
But that's only for the removal. That's not the cost to build it. The
no,
cost
I
to build it
understand that.
Probably is more.
Okay. Are there other such facilities anywhere in the county or in the valley?
I don't know for a fact. There might be some other ones.
Okay, but none in the county then, you could say, most likely. Is that correct?
We do have energy board, battery storage elements in some of the other projects such as FISTandard and Scarlet that the Planning Commission has approved. There are some, I believe there are also some other ones that were permitted by right. They didn't require an entitlement. The difference between when something is required to come before your commission for consideration is based upon whether or not, first of all, it requires an entitlement. There's a lot of things you can do by right. When you add a solar array just for your own house, your own business, and you're not selling back to the grid, that's just your business. That's a by right use. But when it's commercialized, that's when you can require a, often depending on the zone, can require a conditional use permit, particularly when it's in an agricultural zone, as is here, AE20, then the provisions for start to kick in about reclamation, because the intent in this situation is the land is supposed to be agricultural. This is a temporary use for long temporary that will result that sometime in the future it could revert back. So, I mean, we get new water projects and they can suddenly farm this property, it'll be reverted back and it can go back to ag. So it's approved as a use, that's why it's unclassified conditional use permit, that's used for a finite period of time, but can be reclaimed back.
Would you say this is the largest system in the county?
That I wouldn't know.
Okay. Any other questions of staff?
On page 4 under setbacks, where it says front Brawley Avenue west property line, is that not? Because aren't we talking about the McCall area? Or am I reading that wrong?
Where do you see the setbacks? Is it on page 5?
On.
Yeah. That would be wrong.
That'd be McCall?
Operation seems like the map is.
Yeah. I'm afraid we have a typo. I apologize.
Okay. Just. So we'll change that to McCall?
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions? This was routed to Fresno County Fire as well?
Yes, sir, it was.
And they had no issues or concerns?
No, there's no issues.
Because it talks about the, where did I see it? The fire suppression system. I was wondering if you have more information about that, or should I ask the applicant?
I think I don't have the information as a staff member here, but I think you can ask the applicant. Okay. He might shed some more light on it.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions of staff? Thank you, Ijaz.
Thank you.
Would the applicant come forward? Say name and address for the record, please.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Planning Commission. My name is Max Christian. I'm with New Leaf Energy, 1814 Franklin Street in Oakland, California.
Did you have anything to add before we?
Yes, thanks for the time and consideration here. First of all, New Leaf Energy is a national leader in the development of solar and energy storage resources, such as the Apache Project. We have currently over 450 projects across various markets in the United States in development. As part of our former umbrella company, or part of our former company, Borrego, which has a four-decades-long history in California, we've developed, permitted, and constructed hundreds of these projects across the United States. The Apache project is being developed to add much-needed capacity to the CAISO grid. California grid operator CAISO has projected the large-scale deployment of hundreds going on, you know, 1,000 of these types of projects across the system over the coming decade. And the purpose of this battery, as well as the energy storage resources that the CAISO projects, is, as Ijaz noted, these resources are a battery, so they don't generate electricity, but they will charge during the day when there's plentiful resource and generation on the grid, and then will discharge in the evening peak when California is most in need of these capacity resources. We're well aware of the kind of the rolling blackouts here. What Apache will do is provide additional resiliency to the local grid, and it would essentially, by making this local part of the grid less susceptible to rolling blackouts, for example. So it's not going to provide any it's not going to provide backup power to any one facility, but it strengthens the local grid in that way, is making it less susceptible to a rolling blackout. And just to touch on the community benefits, the project will generate 50 full-time jobs during the construction phase. We estimate it'll create five full-time jobs during the operation phase. during its operation lifetime. New Leaf has executed a commitment letter for a project labor agreement during construction of the project. Finally, the project will generate tax revenue for the county. I just want to thank staff for their stewardship of a thorough and transparent process, and appreciate your time and consideration of the project.
Thank you. Are there questions of the speaker? Commissioner Wolf?
Thank you, Mr. Christian. I do have questions about this process. Are you a subcontractor to PG&E, or do you work with PG&E? Do they, or I think it was David Randall mentioned something like you're your own commercial entity. And so it makes me think that you're making money by then saying, hey, now we have this storage, PG&E, do you want to use it if there's a problem? How does it work exactly?
Yes, it's a little convoluted, but we are a developer, so we're a standalone development company. Secure land, put these types of projects, do the engineering to put them through an interconnection study process that the CAISO manages. That can take 2 to 3 years or longer for that study to get done. That's an engineering study to determine if a project of this size and type can safely interconnect to the grid at this point. Once we have secured the site control, the interconnection agreement with PG&E, but the CAISO manages the process, and then a conditional use permit in this case to move forward with the construction of the project. The project is procured by either PG&E, so procured by load-serving entities. You think of it as utilities, but one of them being PG&E, another being the community choice aggregators that operate in the state. We have something like 25 of them in California. So they're under a state mandate to secure capacity, and so they have to have, their mandated number of megawatts of capacity to serve the amount of megawatts of load that they serve. And so it could be PG&E, it could be a different community choice aggregator that procures the offtake or procures the power that's going to be produced by the battery. And so that's a long-term power purchase agreement, that they will buy the power from that, from this battery. And New Leaf will likely partner with a long-term asset owner. So we develop, we partner with a long-term asset owner that will manage, own, and maintain the system for operational life. And they ensure that the project is maintained and operates to the parameters set forth in the power purchase agreement, and sells that power to the requirements of the contract.
So it means I'm thinking you're saying that it you don't have a contract with PG&E yet.
Not currently.
So you they might say no thanks, and then you're just out there on your own.
It's possible. It's unlikely given the current procurement framework. So currently there's a demand for capacity resources. So as generating resources age out or are closed, additional resources, so capacity resources, are coming online, and there's currently a demand for capacity resources such as batteries, wind, solar, gas, other generating resources. And so our expectation the reason that we're developing is that we see that demand, and we anticipate that the battery will be procured. There are annual regular cycles for procurement, so it isn't a one-shot. There are annual cycles for procurement. Further detail is that it's possible that the offtake of capacity from the battery is broken up. So PG&E might procure and sign a contract for some percentage of it. A different offtaker might secure the rest of it. But we anticipate that the demand is such that the entire amount of the battery will be offtaken.
Okay. And it sounds like PG&E probably has these battery storage systems at every substation already. I would think that they have something like this as their own personal backup in case you charge too much or something like that.
There are a number of these projects coming online. So to be clear, this is a newer technology. It's a newer grid asset, and the ownership is such that some of the utilities, SCE, PG&E San Diego, do own some of these, and they will site them adjacent to their substation. But because the CAISO system is an open access, meaning that its generation is separated from the transmission or the poles and wires, that private developers such as ourselves can develop the battery, sell it to PG&E, or sell the power from PG&E or other off-takers. So yes, there are a number of these systems online. I think currently there are 3,000 megawatts operational. That has come up just in the last couple of years, but it's anticipated that by 2030 there will be at least 10 to 12,000 megawatts. So, you know, this is a 200 megawatt project, and the scale of deployment is expected to be much greater in the coming years.
When you say it's 2,000 meg, you said 2,000 or 3,000?
200 megawatts for
No, I know project. For this project, but you said how many in existence?
So there's a there's a study. There are currently 3,000 megawatts that have been recently commissioned.
Okay. What's the average size on those?
For these transmission scale, they are 100 to 200 megawatts. There's at Moss Landing a 1,200 megawatt system. So, you know, if there's 3,000 total online and 1,200 is at Moss Landing, there's not that many currently online, but it's anticipated that, again, within the next 7 years, that at least 10,000 megawatts will be online. It's anticipated that they will be similar in scale to this, 100 to 200 megawatts sited adjacent to a transmission substation. You know, the number of these types of transmission substations that are that the utility owners rely on to move electricity across the corridors, they are limited in number. Sanger is a good example of a project that the substation itself is upgraded, and so now this type of system can be interconnected there at a lower cost to ratepayers, meaning ratepayers don't have to pay for the additional upgrade of that system. So there are a limited number of places on the grid where these types of batteries can interconnect, and the Sanger is a good example of one.
One of the questions I had of staff and wanted to ask you was regards to the fire suppression system and the potential for fire, and if you're aware of any fires in the past, storage systems.
Sure. And to be clear, there are, or to your point, there are a number of, you know, in the thousands of these types of systems deployed in different sizes. More often, I think you just touched on this point, is in California, you can point to a number of systems that are smaller in size, but attached to a solar project. And so the solar charges it on site directly, and then it will put it onto the grid. Often that is in remote areas. So this is a standalone storage system, you know, attached directly to the substation and closer to a load pocket where it's more useful. But across those thousands of systems across the country, they all use this technology currently, or most all of them use this technology, which is lithium-ion batteries, which is the same as we have, you know, something like 2 to 3 million cars on the road currently, right, electric cars that use the same lithium-ion.
And we hear about those catching fire, too.
Right.
And I was referring really to there. I understand I had heard there was an explosion in Arizona a few years ago.
I think Moss Landing, too, wasn't it? Was it Moss Landing?
Yes. Yep. And I can touch on each of those. And I think my point of stating that is that they're ubiquitous now, but they are going to be more so. But because it's a new technology, we don't have the 20 to 30 year track record of, you know, other grid assets that we can say, well, here's the long term track record. But I think because it is new, and because there have been incidents, it's worth noting that this is it's a valid risk to call out. And so our knowledge of it comes from, you know, on the mobile application, meaning in cars, there are, you know, many incidents that we've heard about. On the stationary application, it's different. So the form factor is a, you know, what looks like a 40-foot shipping container, but it's purpose-built, insulated, and has the integrated fire protection system, as well as venting and what are called deflagration valves, which will release gases if there's any sort of a buildup. And so I mentioned that by way of the Arizona incident was the one that's more well-known, and two issues in the kind of the analysis that was done after. First, that system was an early generation system, didn't have deflagration valves. And so what happened is the gases, there was a thermal event, meaning it overheated and there was a thermal runway, but the gases built up. And so the second issue was that when emergency services showed up, when the fire department showed up, their protocol at the time was to wait for 2 hours, see if there was any smoke or any sort of other, you know, evidence, and then access it. And it turns out that was for 2 hours. What happened is the gases built up, and so when they opened it, that actually set off an event. And there was a fire, an event, and that is, you know, the opposite of what should have been done. What has come out as a result of that unfortunate event is that and NFPA and NEC, and there are now better standards for the response, emergency response. And so now, for example, on this project, we will, I think this was in our application, we will put on a training for local emergency response such that it's clear what the training on the protocol for that response should be. And then the second thing is just going to the technology. Now there are these deflagration valves so that that off-gassing doesn't build up. And second, there are internal or integrated fire protection systems that if there's a thermal runway event that's monitored remotely on a second-by-second basis, that that can be mitigated or controlled at the time. And so going to Moss Landing, those are, you know, they were fire events or thermal events. The second event, which has the newer technology, actually everything went right. So there was a thermal event, but the fire protection systems worked. There wasn't a response where it put anyone in harm, and effectively it shut down that cell or that block, and it did what it was supposed to do without, you know, affecting any of the adjacent blocks.
If you're going to share information with the local fire departments, I'd suggest also with Sanger Fire Department, since they're close that way too, in addition to Fresno County Fire.
Okay. Thank you for the yes.
Any other questions? Commissioner Wolf?
This is a little bit for staff and Mr. Christian. It says the ultimate decommissioning of the project in 20 years. It says in the end of 20 years, a battery system will be dismantled, removed. Is there an insurance bond that's put aside to make sure this happens, especially if this company has sold their company down the road three times over and it's ending up with some Japanese owner who doesn't care?
Yes, it's a pain. I don't mean to make light of it, but it is a very topical issue for us these days. Our county has a requirement that when we have these reclamation agreements, that the applicant also provide a financial assurity that that will happen. A lot of different types of projects and in other areas will have different types of mechanisms. We're pretty limited because this is such a long term that, that a lot of instruments such as bonds, et cetera, don't hold up well and require a lot of staff maintenance to attend to the administration of them. So the only thing we currently utilize is what's called a cash escrow agreement. And basically what that means is rather than them handing us $5 million, they take their $5 million and stick it in a bank, and we have an agreement with the bank that if we need it, we get it. That's an oversimplification of the issue, but it provides that, and we also get a limited access agreement that says we can enter onto that property and do that work. And now that that estimate is very difficult, and these days we're getting more and more detailed in the analysis. It has to include things such as everything we do has to be a prevailing wage where the market obviously gets better rates. We can't really provide value for recycling credits because in 20 years we don't know what they are. 20 years ago I could have got cash for some of the glass. Now I have to pay to get rid of it, right? So there is a very robust financial assurity mechanism in place, and that it gets approved by the Board of Supervisors. And believe me, they're concerned. They pay attention to those.
I feel like it's hard enough to get rid of batteries, let alone a giant structure filled with lithium, if lithium batteries, if this has been abandoned. This could be a nightmare for the county.
Yeah. So in our estimates, we make them show us how much material is inert and go to the landfill, how much is hazardous material, such as batteries, transformers, those type of things. And so those are looked at differently, and we come up with different prices. There are COLAs in place. We use the engineering news records, so they don't become stale, so because who knows what inflation is going to do over the next 20 years.
I just had a quick question, maybe to Commissioner Wolf's point about the decommissioning process. So in theory, I mean, 20 years is a long time, but it's also in a strange way not a long time. I mean, a lot can in the scheme of planning and project construction. So in 20 years, you know, assuming that there will be like an increase in demand and on the grid, this project is decommissioned, and you anticipate that more of these projects will come online. what happens when they all start decommissioning in a, you know, rapid succession in 20 to 30 years? Will it put more stress on the grid locally here in Fresno County?
If I could think out 20 years, I don't know if I'd be in this business, but the I think the anticipated, the expectation is that in certain parts of the grid, this kind of grid asset or this kind of ability to store energy is probably going to be seen as a longer term. So what will likely happen is technology will improve, and the need for that project in that area will be increase the need for that project for the longer term, and that would be evidenced in like PPA prices or like the prices that off-takers like PG&E are willing to pay for that. In this case, we've anticipated a an operation life term for what the current contracts are structured at, and so I guess what I'm saying is in the future, perhaps not at this location but other locations, again, you could probably have a smaller footprint as technology gets more efficient and increase the amount of storage. And maybe that that project extends its life at that particular point in the grid. To Commissioner Wolf's point about the decommissioning, I mean, this is something that we do come across as part of the contract for the power purchase. We have to maintain a certain capacity, and that's a rule by the CAISO. And so what it means is you can't have a battery on its last legs getting the same amount of revenue for its capacity value. And so we have to maintain like a 98% capacity factor if we're under contract. And so what that means is at the end of our offtake term, we will have batteries that are essentially within 5 to 10% of their new life. So what's happened in other projects where not necessarily been decommissioned, but they've been in place for a while and they've been under a contract, there are buyers or like resellers, but there are buyers that will come in and say, I will happily take that 90% capacity battery at a you know, market value, but not brand new. And there are examples in Los Angeles, for example, where they repurpose them on a tribal community out east. And so you can repurpose these batteries. It isn't as if it's junk value because they have to maintain their capacity to meet the requirements of the contract.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Christian.
Thank you.
Anyone else to speak in support of this application? Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Seeing none, I'll close the public portion of the hearing, bring it back to the commission for discussion and a motion. Motion would be on page 13.
I'll move to adopt the recommended motion by staff.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Zante and a second by Commissioner Pien to adopt the proposal as presented by staff, as recommended by staff. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Go to item number 4, please.
Regular agenda item number 4, general plan conformity for Fresno Unified School District, proposed Sunnyside High School Agricultural Education Center, proposing to determine the general plan conformity of Fresno Unified School District's proposal to acquire property comprised of 3 parcels totaling approximately 17.75 acres for construction of agricultural education facilities for Sunnyside High School in the AL-20 Zone District and the R-1B Zone District. The proposed Agricultural Education Center is located on 3 adjacent APNs located at the southwest corner of the intersection of Kings Canyon Road and South Minnewawa Avenue, and southerly adjacent on the west side of South Minnewawa Avenue between East Montesino Avenue and East Lane Avenue, approximately 0.75 miles southeast of the nearest city limits of the city of Fresno, and easternly adjacent to the nearest city limits and within the sphere of influence of the city of Fresno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This item comes before you as a regulatory requirement. It's unlike most of our applications. It's a fairly narrow consideration. State statutes require the school district, when they're purchasing property, to ask for a determination from the jurisdiction whether or not the land they're considering purchasing is consistent with the jurisdiction's general plan. It doesn't involve whether or not we think it's consistent with the zoning, whether or not there are environmental issues or other things. We are not the lead agency for CEQA on this. It's just one simple question. Is the proposed use consistent with our general plan? To that end, as the description described, the project is the white area up here. It's a little big anyway.
Dave, when you do that, could you use that side because most of the commissioners are...
Okay, yeah, I'm sorry. There we go. You can see the it's up in on the corner here. It's just there's three parcels, the small one, these two larger ones. As I mentioned, it's about 17 acres adjacent to the school. The intention for the use is for an agricultural educational program. You can see it's its location here in the city. This is the surrounding land use. You can see it abuts the city as well. It's the uses. You can see a lot of homes. This is the Edison community. This is the Roosevelt Community Plan, which calls out the land use as well as low density residential. This is the city of Fresno's general plan designations, although nice information, but not really relative to our decision. This is the specific text. I won't bother to read that for you. But what we're recommending is that you simply find that indeed the proposed use is consistent with the general plan for residential use. Schools are allowed in residential zones. It is obviously an expected facility as areas develop residentially that school sites will be located in various locations to accommodate the population that grows up with the higher density. So this would be, again, staff's determination. It's consistent, and we're asking you to make those same findings as recommended. Glad to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions of staff? Thank you, Dave. Is the applicant here? Come forward.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the supervisors. I'm used to saying members of the board. My name is Jeremy Ward. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of College and Career Readiness for the Fresno Unified School District. And as a part of my responsibilities, I oversee career technical education for Fresno Unified.
Mr. Ward, could we deal with you first?
And you bet.
Did you have anything else to add or
here
to
I do.
Questions? Go ahead, please.
We're excited to be able to bring the acquisition of this property for the use of educational purposes, specifically agricultural educational purposes, in front of you today. We recognize that it is not significant that for the longest time, the Fresno Unified School District, which represents the largest school district within the county of Fresno, the third largest in the state of California, does not have a significant agricultural educational program that sits within the most robust agricultural county in the United States of America. We're excited to be able to bring a proposal forward to be able to not only acquire the property, but utilize the property to begin to really develop both plant and animal science opportunities for students to learn of all ages here within our city, learn about career opportunities, learn about what exists within our county and how important these agricultural opportunities are that exist here, in a way that is adjacent to a high school. And that's a significant component too. As Fresno Unified is, for the most part, a landlocked district, we do not have opportunities to be able to acquire properties that are immediately adjacent or next to high schools because we are fully developed and for the most part around all of our facilities, which is why this property, this particular property, is particularly exciting for us to develop that opportunity. Furthermore, we do have a couple of high schools that I would say represent elements of agricultural education programs. Sunnyside High School is one of them. They actually have ag education teachers that are actively working in the arena of ag education. They actually had hundreds of students that showed and represented at the last Fresno County Fair and won a number of awards. So we're excited to be able to bring this property potentially forward to not only that school for high school ag education opportunities, but actually in a way that it would be accessible for not only all of the school district, all children of all ages to be able to experience ag education, but also in a way that the community surrounding would have accesses to the property as well.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Mr. Wolf?
It says that you guys are acquiring this property. Maybe it's from the families that are listed here, Paul at Magian and the Machuki
Family Trust.
I'm saying it wrong.
Yeah.
Are they donating the land to you guys? It must be reasonable because this is a pretty prime piece of land in the middle of residential areas.
We're purchasing the land. Each parcel is approximately $1 million, so we're purchasing both parcels for around $2 million.
That's correct.
So we purchased separately the first initial property that's directly on Kings Canyon Avenue right there. That was the first piece of property that was actually for sale. There was a number of other potential buyers that stepped forward at the time for different purposes that I'm aware of. None were for residential purposes. And then when the second property owner, which is directly south, was approached and was made aware that the school district would be interested in purchasing a property for the purposes of agricultural education, he too was interested in selling. He currently houses his horses on the land, so there's a number of horses there currently. And I think knew that it was not going to be a long-term piece of property that he wanted to maintain, and I think was excited about the idea that children have access to agricultural experiences on that property.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Wolf, before you go, could you please give an address for yourself?
Well, I can give you my home address. We have a lot of addresses in Fresno Unified. My home address
is Fresno Unified is fine.
2309 Tulare Street.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Thank you.
It's optional. We just ask if you're willing to give it, you give it. Next speaker.
Good morning, Chairman and Supervisor, excuse me.
Planning Commissioners.
Planning Commissions. Oh, let me try that again. Commissioners, I apologize. Thank you for this opportunity, and also listening here in the crowd was actually really fascinating this morning. So thank you all for the work that you do. This is something we're very.
Your name too.
I'm Alex Bellinger. I'm the Chief Executive over Operations for Fresno Unified School District. I support our educational department and representation of our overall team. We've also evaluated this and worked heavily with the City of Fresno because they have interest in this area as well, working with Sofia Pagolados, and they were very interested in this moving forward with Fresno Unified. We work collaborative not only with the county but with the city agencies as well. We're looking at the community inclusion and opportunity to serve not only our community but our schools, and so we're very excited. So as far as kind of touching all bases, and then the support we've had from the county has been exceptional. So just want to say thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Anyone else to speak in support of this application? Anyone here in opposition to this application? Seeing none, bring it back to, I'll close the public portion of the hearing, bring it back to the commissioners for a motion.
I make the motion. So I agree with the staff and move to determine that the proposed decision.
Okay, a motion by Commissioner Chata. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Second by Commissioner Arabian. And that's to adopt the recommendation of staff, which would say that the proposal conforms with the general plan. We'll do a voice vote. No, just voice vote, yes. Anyone? First, I want to, before we vote, ask if there's any discussion and make sure I do that. Okay.
I'll just say that for me, it's not a matter of whether we like it or not. In this case, I do actually like it.
Go through anyway.
But it is a matter of general plan conformancy, and it's fairly obvious. So.
Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? This carries 5-0. Thank you. Item number 5 was canceled. Item number 6.
Regular agenda number 6, unclassified conditional use permit application number 3754 and initial study number 8340, proposing to allow an unnamed telecommunications facility consisting of a 105-foot-tall monopine tower wireless communications tower with related facilities on a 50-foot by 50-foot fenced site leased area of a 5-acre parcel in the RR Zone District. The subject parcels are located on the west side of Sunny Slope Road between East Trimmer Springs Road and Sunny Slope Road with an unincorporated community of Trimmer, Pine Flat.
Good morning, everybody. The subject cell tower will be located in the third parcel here. It will gain access from East Trimmer Road. The surrounding properties... the property is in... This is the property here. It will access the road from here. You can see access from here. It'll be located approximately here. The site itself, the leased area will be about 50 by 50 foot area. You can see the cell tower will be located adjacent here. It will be in a monopole style. The project itself, the monopole itself will be sheathed. As to blend in with the surrounding property images and to be aesthetically pleasing. The property in question, there aren't any existing cell towers in the surrounding area, and the cell site itself will be co-locatable and will provide a much-needed service to the community. This is the area elevated, what it would look like approximately 100 feet up, where the project site is. This is the overview. This is the house it's located next to. You can see here, before, after. It blends in quite well with the surrounding property of surrounding area. Before, after. So you can see here, the existing site, there is limited access and limited coverage. 5 findings need to be made. Staff was able to make all 5 findings. The roads are adequate to serve the use. The operation in question, they'll have about 2 maintenance trips per month. There weren't any effects on the property owners, the surrounding properties. It's consistent with the general plan. We support wireless communicative services, and we believe that it is necessary for the public health and safety and general welfare. Therefore, we recommend that the planning commissioners approve this project, as all 5 findings can be made. If you have any questions, I'm here to answer them.
Thank you, Elliot. Any questions, staff? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is the applicant here wishes to make a presentation?
Good morning, Commission. My name is Nick Tagus with 51 Wireless on behalf of Telespan. We agree with staff's findings. We couldn't have said it more concisely ourselves, so with that, I'm here to answer any questions that any of you might have.
Any questions of the speaker?
Mr. Tagus, do you already have contracts with cell services?
I do not. I represent Telespan. Telespan currently has an anchor tenant, which is T-Mobile.
That's the only contract?
Currently, that's the only carrier right now that's funded this their portion to put their equipment on this tower. Both AT&T and Verizon have no service in that area. Once the tower is constructed, typically what happens is the competing engineers see that their competitors have service in a certain area, and then they look at how that happened and where it is, and then typically when the original tower owner goes through this long process, they then will fund the project because it's cheaper and is quicker under 6409.
Will they do their own project, or they'll ask about co-locating?
It's a co-locatable tower, so that's why the compound is 50 feet by 50 feet square. There's enough room in there for 3 carriers, all of their ground equipment. The tower is tall enough for at least 3 carriers to put all their equipment on that tower. So this tower will serve the community there as well as all of the folks that are recreating at the lake. And it is designed, we submitted the building permit this week at risk. Structural capacity found that it passes with three carriers on this tower.
Okay. Any other questions of the speaker? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else to speak in support of this application? Is there anyone here in opposition to this application? Seeing none, I'll close the public portion of the hearing, bring it back to the commission for discussion and a motion, which can be on page 9.
I'll make a motion to approve as read by staff.
Okay.
Second it.
We have a motion to approve as per staff's recommendation by Commissioner Arabian and a second by Commissioner Chata. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Item 7, information. Staff, any discussion?
Nothing in particular at this time.
Okay, then it's okay. My turn.
Not quite yet. I have a... Okay. So I don't know how this works, but it's been eating at me that I voted yes for one of the things. It won't make a difference if I change my vote to no. It'll still pass, but it's driving me crazy.
Today?
Can, am I allowed for the record to have no on the docket, even though it's not going to change the outcome of the vote?
You have to reopen the hearing, reconsideration. Yeah.
Do a motion for reconsideration, chair would have to reopen.
Okay.
Is it that important to do a motion for reconsideration?
No, it just eats at me.
Okay.
To be honest, I'm really bothered by the battery storage unit.
Okay. All right, but we're not going to reopen. The item stands, and we will move forward. Thank you. Commissioner Chata, I didn't hear if you had something to say.
Well, she
I interrupted.
No, it's
that's okay. Problem. Something bothering you, you got to get it out. I understand that.
We'll talk about that later.
You were asking me someday.
Okay.
Monday, that's why I abstained sometimes. That's why something I abstained.
Okay, Commissioner.
Okay, I want to make a motion that let's adjourn the meeting.
Well, no one's. Everybody's gone.
No, these guys are here. They can't go until unless you adjourn the meeting.